33, in verse number 18, Yudchet, Lamed Gimel Yudchet, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, Ir Shechem. And Yaakov came, Shalem, the word Shalem is complete, whole. Here the idea is that whatever damage was done to him during the struggle, his limping, which before we saw he was still limping before, now when he came to the city of Shechem, it has been cured already. He's Shalem, Shalem. Asher Beretz Knaan, which is in the land of Knaan. As a matter of fact, the city of Shechem is the first actual settlement that Yaakov comes to in the land of Israel. Up to now, he's just moving towards the settled part of the land. Shechem is the first city that Yaakov comes to in Israel. And he comes Shalem, whole. And then it says, why was he healed? What was the idea behind it, you mean? I mean, be healed could be just happens to be that whatever damage was, that was temporary. Again? He's no longer crippled. But the reason why the Torah remarks it, why the Torah observes it, why the Torah writes it, is very important. Yeah?
I was going to speculate that perhaps because he entered the land of Israel, there was a healing quality about the land itself.
Well, partially, you are partially correct. You see, the idea here is the following. Remember, the principle that guides the whole process here of the settlement in Israel is the principle of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. Everything that happened to our forefathers establishes the pattern for the future. The coming to Israel here is a return from the Galut, from the exile, right? Yaakov was in exile. Now he's coming back. He's settling in Eretz Israel. The idea of Shalem, right, which has to do with Shleimut and Shalom, peace and fulfillment and completion, it's all one word in Hebrew. This is the idea of the Messianic era, right? Coming to Eretz Israel and finally settle down. As a matter of fact, according to our tradition, we had certain moments in our history that were semi-messianic. We never actually made it to the messianic period. But a few times in history, we came very close to it, to a semi-messianic period. We have many, many hints that when Yaakov comes now to Eretz Israel, we're going to see it in the future parshiot also, he thinks that this is the final coming in. This is it. And for in the future, that remains like a pattern, that sometimes we're going to come back and say, this is it, but it's not actually it, but we think that this is it. Now, those moments in history, when we came to a semi-messianic, or like almost a messianic experience, was the period of Shlomo HaMelech, by the way. What is the nature of the messianic era? Peace. Recognition of Torah, the supremacy of of Kimitzion Teitze Torah, the tremendous knowledge and wisdom that comes from Jerusalem through Torah, when everybody is sort of satisfied with their share, all that was fulfilled in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. It's not in vain that his name is Shlomo, right? Because the word Shlomo, the name Shlomo, hints to what? To the same thing, Shalem, Yaakov Vayavo, Yaakov Shalem, that the fulfillment, the completion, the peacefulness of the whole era of Shlomo HaMelech, 40 years of no war, like it's like an idyllic period in the by the Jewish people. And besides that, what was the nature of the relationships of the neighbors with Shlomo HaMelech? Enormous respect, awe, as a matter of fact, for his enormous knowledge and intelligence and wisdom, and they would come to Shlomo HaMelech for advice. That is the fulfillment, almost, of Kimitzion Teitzei Torah, Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, which is a prophecy concerning the Gentiles. They will recognize the wisdom of the Torah. So it was almost such a period. So this is the word Shalem, which means that all the flaws of Yaakov Avinu, right, the pain in his hip, part of it, That's only as long as he's coming towards the settlement in Israel. But once he settles, the final settlement in Eretz Israel brings about shlemut, completion, fulfillment. And in verse number 19, Vayiken et chelkat ha-sadeh asher natasham. And he bought, Vayiken comes, is related to the word kinyan. He acquired the piece of land, and that's where he settled down, Miad b'nei Hamor. Remember, we spoke about the fact that three areas in Eretz Israel were bought, like the three main points of Israel, the ones that maintain the whole of Israel, so to speak, were bought. One of them is Hebron, Shechem, and Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is bought by David HaMelech. Shechem is bought by Yaakov. And he bought it with a certain amount of money. Yeah, exactly. And that's the place, this is the place that he inherits specifically for Yosef. It's as if Yosef has to maintain the tradition of Yaakov Avinu. Yeah, we believe it's not a coincidence at all, because if you control the three cities, you control the whole of Israel. We believe it's part of the nature of Eretz Israel that it's as if, like, when you put up something, if you put up the three points, if you hold down the three points, you are holding down everything. You are controlling everything. And like Shechem, Yerushalayim, and Hebron, that is the whole of Israel. It's not that it's actually the whole of Israel. You control that, you control the whole of Israel. If you admit on the three points belong to us, you've admitted the whole of the land of Israel belongs to us. Right? This is what the Gemara says. If they come and claim from you why the land of Israel is not yours, show them you have bought the three places, as if to say, once you have the three places, that's it, then it's yours. And it's not a coincidence that somehow there is a Yerushalayim, of course, and even Shechem and Hebron is always part of the struggle. Now, let's go on, chapter 34. This incident is going to have a very, it's an important part of the life of Yaakov Avinu, this incident. Is going to establish a certain relationship between Yaakov and his sons, Yaakov and his neighbors, and so on and so forth. So where do they live right now? Right next to Shechem, around Shechem. Vateitze Dina bat Leah. And Dina, the daughter of Leah, goes out. Asher yalda li Yaakov, that Leah gave birth to Yaakov. Lirot bivnot haaretz. Why did she go out? To see the daughters of the land. That's why she went out. So the oral tradition, Rashi quotes the oral tradition here. How come it's mentioned? Dina, the daughter of Leah. So the oral tradition says, Rashi quotes, Ela, al shem yitziata, because she went out, nikreit bat Leah. She's called the daughter of Leah because there is some characteristic that goes through Leah and Dina. Sheaf hi yatzanit haita, because also by Leah we find yatzanit, that she went out. Well, exactly, remember? She went out to meet her husband. Big deal. So why? So she went out. No. That's a specific characteristic of Leah. She went out. If the Torah mentions it, that is part of the character of Leah. And that is transferred to Dina. So when it says Dina bas Leah, we are saying, you see, like mother, like daughter. The daughter is a yatzanit, the mother is a yatzanit. It's as if we are blaming Leah for going out. Is that the idea? You'll see right away what it means here. You know, we find when Yaakov meets Esav, right in the big, before in the Parsha, it says that introduced Esav to his 11 sons, right? At this time he has 11 sons. So Rashi quotes, it's part of the Gemara, where was the daughter? I mean, they had 11 sons and one daughter. What happens to the daughter? So Rashi quotes that she was hidden. Why? Because he was afraid that Esav would see her, and I don't know, that they would get married or something, you know. And then in the Gemara it says, and Yaakov is blamed for that. He's criticized for that. Now, you hear the statement, Yaakov is criticized because he was afraid that when Esav will see Dinah, he'll fall madly in love with her, and then there would be no way to separate them. Right? That's what he was afraid of. And then he's blamed that he's doing something to prevent it. And I would ask you, right? You have a daughter, and you have Russia, the evil person Esav, right? And you are afraid. So would it be anything wrong? Would there be anything wrong in hiding your daughter so that the evil Esav shouldn't get a hold of her? Obviously not. Obviously not. So if the oral tradition blames, criticizes Yaakov for it, that means that in reality, the marriage between Esav and Dinah would have been a positive step, isn't it? Doesn't it? Can't we conclude that? Now, how can it be that it would be a positive step? How can it be? All right, because there is no question about it, that there is something about the idea of zivug, which sometimes it's transferred between mother and daughter. There is an incredible chazal. The chazal, there is an oral tradition which says, remember the story later on, you know who Yosef marries, by the way, later on? Huh? Asnat, a girl called Asnat. And who was the father? It says, Asnat, Bas, the daughter of Potiphar. So it's very interesting. He married the daughter of his boss, of his former boss, remember? Potiphar. So in the oral tradition, we have the following statement. Who started up with Yosef, remember? Her mother. Her mother. Both his boss's wife, remember? His boss's wife? His mother-in-law, exactly. His mother-in-law. His future mother-in-law, exactly. So the oral tradition says, why? Because she sensed a connection. She sensed the zivug. But she was wrong. It was her daughter, really. So she had a sense. You know, Ruach HaKodesh, sometimes Ruach comes from Kodesh, but there is such a thing as Ruach that comes from other sources. I mean, it's not necessarily that she was a tzaddikis, but she had a sense, she had an intuition. And in that intuition told her something which comes out to be true, but not by her, by her daughter. So again, you see the idea of the connection. There is a connection between mother and daughter that here we see between Leah, right, and Dinah. Now, if it says that Leah was the zivug of Esav, right, you know what it really means? That she complements Esav. Which means that if Esav would have married Leah, right, it's possible, maybe not, he has free will, everybody has free will. But the idea is that she could have shaped his behavior in such a way that he should become a tzaddik. She complements him, right? So fine, she didn't want, she cried. She said, no, it's a thankless job. Why should I do that? Why should I give up my life with this evil person, right? Just for the possibility. So she didn't want, so she cried. So God answered her prayers, right? And she married Yaakov, not Esav. But the daughter took over some of her characteristics, right? And in those characteristics of Dinah were such that she could have been the complement of Esav. And who knows, perhaps, if Esav would have married Dinah, it would have been a positive step. Who knows if Dinah couldn't have changed Esav? As a matter of fact, most probably yes. Because if it's most probably no, Yaakov wouldn't have been criticized. So if Yaakov is criticized, we are saying that Yaakov should have judged the possibilities and he should have realized, yes, Dinah could have had a positive effect on Esav. In order to do that, you have to be a very special person to be able to control, to tame, to guide Esav, right? You have to be a very special person. So when Dinah goes out to establish contact with the daughters of the land, why is she doing that? Something to do with the characteristic which makes her the daughter of Leah, which means that special capacity that God gave her to have influence on others, to shape other people's ideas, right? So now it makes sense why the Torah says, you know why she went out to the daughters of Shechem? Because she's the daughter of Leah. And there is something about Leah that is connected with going out, going out. What is Esav? Also a man who goes out. Yaakov is the man of the tent. He goes out, right? So that is the nature of Leah, that she has the capacity to control and influence the one who goes out. And that's what Dinah is. So what the Torah is telling me here is not that the Torah is criticizing Leah. Just the opposite. The Torah is telling you it's because of that capacity that she decided to go out. She went out, what we would call, to be mekarev, to bring closer the daughters of Shechem. They are living in Israel. They want to have influence over their neighbors. This is what she's doing. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Verse number 2, yeah.
Well, there's also a case where Yosef stands in front of his mother, so that Esau doesn't see her.
Right.
He's merited for that.
What? He's merited for that. And there is a specific reason for that. I don't want to go into too many details about this point, but since you mentioned that, there are two places where it's mentioned that at a certain point, Rachel has doubts about herself and says, hey, maybe I'm supposed to marry Esau. There are two places like that. Do you remember? When at the end she can't have any children, it says, when she has this child, the first child, Yosef, it says, God took away my shame. So you know what Rashi quotes right there? What was the shame of Rachel? That people were saying, hey, maybe Rachel now is the zivug, the soulmate of Esau. Right? Perhaps. And then again we see the same idea that Yosef stands up in front of Rachel in order that Esau shouldn't see her. Now again, what is the idea? At what point does Rachel perhaps become the soulmate of Esau? Remember, we spoke about this. We won't go into it too much. There is a switch of roles between Leah and Rachel, a very important switch of roles which causes Rachel to lose her privilege to lie together with Yaakov in Me'arat HaMachpelah. And Rachel becomes a little bit of Leah. Leah becomes a little bit of Rachel. That's why she becomes a matriarch of ours, Leah, and she has the son Yisachar, which really is a purely spiritual son, right? But Rachel becomes a little bit of Leah too. So at that point, the fear goes into Rachel's mind, perhaps since I'm a little bit of Leah, so I'm a little bit of a zivuk to Esau. That's where the fear of the relationship between Rachel and Esau comes about, okay? But Leah is still the original zivuk, soulmate of Esau. Yeah.
Where there's a midrash that every tribe son is born with another.
There is a midrash, but
where are they?
You realize that Rashi, for instance, ignores it. That's why Rashi says, when the 11 sons are presented to Esau, Rashi asks, "What about Dinah?" Rashi doesn't ask what about the other daughter. So,
the other
what?
The other ones,
they are not important. I don't understand.
No,
they are also daughters.
No, but nobody's going to worry about that. It's going to take
the... No, I understand. That's the answer. The answer is he's hiding Dinah. But why does Rashi ask only about Dinah if there are other daughters? So obviously Rashi doesn't accept the midrash that says that they had other daughters too. It's one opinion, but he doesn't take it as an opinion that he holds of, right? So, but there is such an opinion that they had daughters and they died. There is such an opinion. That with every tribe a daughter was born and she died afterwards. Afterwards. Before coming into Egypt. Exactly.
How do we explain that?
Yeah. That what?
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, what?
But how do they explain the death of the daughters?
Well, it's a separate issue. We won't go into it. Let's go on. Verse number 2. Vayar Ota. What happens with Dinah? She was seen by the prince of the city. Now remember, those cities were city kingdoms. city-states. Every city was an independent entity, a political entity, and they had their own kings. So he, Hamor, was the head, the king of the city of Shechem. And Shechem ben Hamor, the name Shechem is the name of the city, but the name of the prince too, the son of the king. Nesi Haaretz, Hamor is the Nesi Haaretz. Vayikach ota, vayishkav ota, vayaneha. He kidnapped her and raped her. And after that, in verse number 3, Vatidbak nafsho, bedina bat Yaakov. After he raped her, he fell in love with her. Yeah.
By Amnon and Tamar.
Right.
The other way.
Right. But there are all kinds of midrashim here, what happened in between. But in any case, at this point, after raping her, he decides that he can't live without her. He tried to convince her to agree to stay with him. It shouldn't be against her will. Vayomer Shechem el Hamor Aviv Lemor. So Shechem comes to his father and he says, Kachli et hayalda azot lisha. Take the child, the girl for me. Take her means what? Speak to her parents. That's how you take her. You know, that's you buy her, so to speak. So Kachli et hayalda azot lisha. Pay for my right to marry this girl. So in verse number 5, it says that Yaakov heard about it. Yaakov shama kiti meya dinavito. Ubanav hayuet mikneyu basade. However, the sons weren't there at the time. They were taking care of the sheep. Vecherish Yaakov ad boam. So Yaakov wouldn't make a decision before the sons came to him. Interesting. This he didn't want to make a decision without the sons. What's the idea behind it? So there is a transfer of power here. You realize there is a transfer of power. Yaakov gives over the power to the children, to the sons. They become the decision makers. We'll see later on too. They become the decision makers. Yaakov, of course, constantly gives them advice and he may criticize them, but the decision is in their hands. Yeah?
Is there any reason why he's called Hamor?
There is, definitely is, because Hamor is very closely connected with Homer, which means physicality, materialism. That's what the Torah is describing, right? The struggle against the materialism in Shechem, right? The Yaakov represents the spirituality, and they represent materialism. And it becomes very relevant when they want to become Jewish. Can they really become Jewish or not?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The city is named for the son because his father was weak, and he could control him and tell him, you know, get this damsel for me for a wife. Do this, do that. And his father would listen.
Well, it could be. There is such an idea that the word Hamor, right, is related to the fact that you ride on him, right? It's like a Hamor that you tell him where to go, so Shechem tells him where to go. So that would fit with what you are saying, that he was weak. Fine. I mean, you know, he was the type of a father that whatever the child, the prince wants, that's it. You give it. Prince wants, you give it. That, right? So that's. In that sense, he's a Hamor. But it's also true that he's a Hamor because it's Homer. He's giving in to the physical desires of Shechem. Right. So, what's the idea behind the giving over of the power? It says like this. When the Jews came to Eretz Israel, a major change happened after Yetzias Mitzrayim, when the Jews came to Eretz Israel. How were Torah decisions made before Jews came into Eretz Israel? If a person had a problem, he had to decide, what do we do? In the desert.
Went to Moses.
And when they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he say? Did he say, well, let me think about it, I'll come up with some idea. Is that the way he did it? No, he didn't do it that way. He went straight to the source. Every single time we find that Moshe Rabbeinu is asked a question which he doesn't have a direct information about the question, he immediately says, okay, I'll just ask God. Right? That's the way he made decisions in the Midbar. In the Midbar, you went straight to the source, direct. As soon as they come to Eretz Israel, the nature of the decision-making process of the Jewish people changes. How is it? What is the decision-making process of the Jews once they come to Eretz Israel? It's given over to the Jewish people. Hashem himself gives up his right, so to speak. Hashem decides that from now on, Torah is in your hands. You have a Sanhedrin? You have a new problem, you decide. As a matter of fact, it says, the Gemara says, that the day Moshe Rabbeinu died, thousands of laws were forgotten. Right. And people came to Yoshua Binun, and they say to him, you know, ask God, you know, just to tell us what's going on. And Yoshua Binun says, what do you mean? God? You know, God won't ask you anymore. From now on, it's your obligation. You figure out yourself. And they had to sit down and work through the methodology of Torah and come up with their own decisions. You hear the transfer of power when they come to Eretz Yisrael. It's given over from the father to the children. Right? And again, Maasei Avot Siman Lebanim. What happens to our patriarchs, it's just establishing the pattern. When they come to Eretz Yisrael, the power, the decision-making power is given to whom? To the children. To the children. Yaakov is still there, right? In other words, Hashem still sends prophets, but do prophets make Torah decisions? They affect, they criticize, they influence, but prophets don't make Torah decisions. The children make Torah decisions, okay? This is what's going on over here.
So there's a parallel between Yaakov and his son and Chamor and Shechem, where Yaakov is teaching his son how to guide their own lives and letting them have a little bit more.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is mentioned that that's the difference. By Shechem, he's riding on the donkey. Now, as he controls him for physical needs, right? By Yaakov, it's an intentional decision for the power of Torah, the Torah decision to be given over to the children. That's part of the growth of Klal Yisrael. By Shechem, is the exact opposite. It's part of the corruption. That Hamor has a son like Shechem, and look what he does. And look what Yaakov's children do, right? And in Pasuk Vov, Vayetzei Hamor, Avi Shechem El Yaakov. So the parents meet, Hamor and Yaakov. And at that point, Pasuk Zayin, Uvnei Yaakov, Bau Min HaSadeh. They come back from the field, Kesham'am, as soon as they heard, Vait Atzvu Ha'anashim. Vait Atzvu, Atzuv. Atzuv is sadness. They were upset. Vayichar Lahem Me'od. And they were very angry. They were upset and angry. Why? Ki Nevala Asa BeYisrael. Nevala means a disgusting thing was done to Israel. Lishkav Et Bat Yaakov, to rape the daughter of Yaakov. So it's interesting. You hear the double expression here. Yaakov, Israel. They were upset and they were angry. Here, upset and angry. Why? Because a disgusting thing, Nevala, was done to Israel and the daughter of Yaakov was raped. So it's very interesting here that the commentaries say that here there were two reactions. There was a reaction, first of all, of a feeling that what was done goes against the holiness of the Jewish people, right? It's an anti-kedusha act. It's a tomei act. It's an impure act. There is like an impurification of the purity of the Jewish people. It goes against the purity, the tahara of the Jewish people, right? Now, when the Jewish people are in a very high level, they are called Israel, right? Because the name of Yaakov becomes Israel when he finally overcomes, when he comes to a state of perfection, an act that goes against the sanctity of the Jewish people, or by the golden calf. Exactly, by the golden calf. By the golden calf again. What do we see by the golden calf? The Levites, again, because if something was done against God, right? Right? Also, also that's the Levites. Again, that's the Levites reacting because something is done against God. Now, Shimon reacts for another reason. Shimon has a natural faithfulness to his family. He's very close. He's a family man, very close to the family. As a matter of fact, you mentioned Pinchas, and he reacted against a descendant of Shimon, right? A descendant of Shimon, and it says that that descendant of Shimon was surrounded with the other members of the family of Shimon, and they said, "We are with him," even though he did something disgusting. So what do you see? That by Shimon, the main thing is the family. Okay? So the two reactions here represent the reaction of Levi and Simon, Levi and Shimon. When it says here that Kinevala Asabi Israel, a disgusting thing was done Israel to the holiness of the Israel people, who are we referring to? Levi. But when it says Lishkaves Bas Yaakov, who reacted with anger because my sister was raped? That's Shimon. Right? So that we see the different reaction between the two. And in verse number 8, Vaydaber Hamor Itam Lemor. And this is what Hamor said to them. Shechem beni chashka nafsho bevitchem. My son Shechem, once your daughter, tenu na ota lo lisho, give him your daughter as a wife. Right? After all, I'm the king, and I'm telling you, you give your daughter as a wife. But you are going to get something in return.
So we don't ask the dina anything here, how she feels about it?
Oh, no, nothing. I mean, it's because that's the custom there. You buy her. As soon as you buy her, of course, she has no say. That's what they are assuming. By us, there is no such thing. In the Jewish law, it's osur, it's prohibited to marry a girl until she wants. That's what it says. That's part of the halacha. You can't marry her against her will, but that wasn't part of the culture in those days. But what are you going to get in return? Verse number 9. Vehitchatnu otanu. And we are offering you in return our daughters. You give us your daughters, we'll give you our daughters. Benoteichem titun lalu. You will give us your daughters. Vedbnoteinu tikchu lachem. So, fair. We are being fair. Right? After all, we are the powerful ones. We are being established here. You are the newcomers. You are the strangers. And look what we are offering you. That you can actually become one with us. Ve'itanu teishevu. And you will be able to settle with us. Ve'haaretz tiftihe lifneichem. The land will be open for you. Shevu uscharuas. Charua means you will be able to develop it. In a business fashion, which means you'll be able to make money from this deal. Vehe ochazuba, which means you will take hold of the land. The land will actually be yours. Sounds like a tremendous offer, right? To be one with them, with Shechem, with the powerful king of Shechem. Vayomer Shechem el avia velachea emtzachem beinechem. Ve'asher tomru elai etein. He realized, because this is a second statement, verse number 11, he realized that he's not convincing them. So he says, okay, probably what you want is more money. Fine, just mention anything you want and I'll give you. Verse number 12. Harbu olai me'od moharu matan. Perhaps you are embarrassed to ask a lot. So let me tell you beforehand, don't be embarrassed. As much as you can ask, ask. No problem. Harbu olai. Whatever you say, add to it. I dare you. I challenge you to come up with a ridiculous sum. And I'll come up with it. Don't worry about it. Harbu olai me'od moharu matan. Ve'etna kasher temura. I'll give you exactly what you want. Utnu li etan hara lisha. Just agree that we should keep your daughter. Vaya'anu bnei Yaakov et Shechem v'et Hamor avi b'mirma. So the sons of Yaakov answered b'mirma as a trick. They made up a trick. Vayidaberu, and they spoke, taking in consideration asher timei adina achotam. They couldn't forget the fact, because all the time Hamor is ignoring a major fact. his son has kidnapped and raped the daughter. I mean, it's, if he would have come beforehand, it would be one thing, but he comes after the fact, and now he wants that we should agree to the marriage? So they made up a trick. Vayomru Alehem. So the sons of Yaakov, again, it's the sons of Yaakov and not Yaakov, they come up with the following idea. They say to him, Lo nuchal lasot hadavar hazeh. We can't agree to what you say. Latet et achotenu le'ish asher lo orla. We can't agree that our sister should marry someone who is uncircumcised. Ki cherpa hilanu. That's an embarrassment to us. For us, that's part of our beliefs. Ach bezot neot lachem. But there is one way that we can agree to what you offer. Im tihiyu kamonu, if you will be like us, lehimo lachem kol zachar, to become circumcised. Now, again, what is the deal here? It seems just become circumcised and that's it, and we agree. No, they didn't say that. They said, be like us. Now, be like us could mean something else. It could mean you have to ideologically be like us. Besides that, you need circumcision. But what about circumcision without being like us? That's meaningless. It's no circumcision at all. So in a way, what they are offering is join the Jewish people. Convert to Judaism. That's what they are saying. They are saying, Tiyu kamon, it means convert to Judaism. Then, Venatanu ednoteinu lachem, vednotechem nikach lanu. Then we'll agree that we will give you our daughters and we'll take your daughters. V'yashavnu itchem v'hayinu le'am echad. They are offering that they should all become one large Jewish people. Ve'im lo tishmu eleinu lehimol. And if you won't listen to me, to us, lehimol, to circumcise, ve'lakachnu et biteinu ve'alachnu, we'll just take our daughter and we'll go home. I mean, a very strange statement. I mean, they are both ignoring the fact, or they intentionally make as if they are ignoring the fact that she has been kidnapped, right, in the palace. They can't get her out. It's as if, like, yeah, we listen, you don't? So we are going to go and take her on our own, you know, so it's up to you. Vaitevu divrehen beinei chamor. Chamor liked the idea. Remember, the idea is that not Shechem and Chamor should become circumcised. The whole city has to become circumcised. All the male members of the city, right, have to become circumcised. It's a difficult thing for everybody to agree just because the prince likes the girl. Right. In verse number 19. Oh, wait. So he makes up a plan how to fool the city. You'll see right away. Chamor realizes he can't sell the city. The idea, my son wants to marry their daughter, so therefore let's become all circumcised and change our religion. It won't go. So he makes up a new plan. Listen carefully. How Hamor presents the case to the people in the city, as opposed to the offer that Hamor makes to Yaakov. Compare it. Velo echar hanar lasot adavar. The young man himself, as soon as he was told, you know, you have to become circumcised, he says, sure, of course, in order to get this girl, anything. Ki chafetz bevat Yaakov. He wants the daughter of Yaakov. Vehu nichbad mikol beit aviv. He himself, Shechem, you hear, he's the most honorable of all the children of Hamor. Can you imagine this? This kidnapper, the rapist, is of all the children of Hamor, he's the most chashuv, the most honorable of all the children of Hamor, right? So he's a very honorable person. So as soon as he hears that the father made up the deal, so of course he does it. The problem is, how do we convince the rest of the city? I mean, there's no problem with his son. There's no problem with himself. What about the rest of the city? So they come in verse number 20. Vayavo Hamor Ushchem Bno El Shari Ram. The word shar literally means the gate. But it was the custom in the olden days that the major meetings of the leaders of a city was at the shar, right? Like it says, you know, in Eshet Chai, we say, V'ahaleluo basharim maasea. The woman's actions will be praised in the gates. What does it mean by the gates? The leaders of the community will praise her action. So you see, there is always a connection between the gates of the city and the leadership of the city. So therefore, we understand why they come to the gates of the city to make the big decision. Should we accept the terms or shouldn't we accept the terms? So listen carefully. You have to hear the words here of how Hamor and Shechem present the case. And they say the following. Ha'anashim ha'ele. These people, the Jews, shleimim heim itanu. They want to be shalem. Shalem means whole. It means they're not trying to fool us. V'yeshvu ba'aretz v'yizcharu ota. They will settle with us and they will do business. V'ha'aretz hinei rachavat yadayim lifneihem. And they have all the opportunities to do great business. Et b'notam nikach lanu lenashim. We will take their daughters. So what should be the next statement? What? Just in the before, when he presents the case to Yaakov, he says in verse number 9, we will give benoteichem titnu lanu, vet benoteinu tikhu lachem. Now, if you say, you will give us your daughters, and you will take our daughters. If you pay attention, who are you giving supremacy to? Who are you giving the main decision to? If I say, you can take my daughters, right? And you will give us your daughters. So, who am I giving the right to choose? The other side, you hear? So when he says it to Yaakov, in order to make it more palatable to Yaakov, that's the way he uses it. That's the way he puts it. You see, in verse number 9, we will marry each other. Benoteichem doesn't say your daughters we will take, because what would that imply? Your daughters will take, that we will make, right? No. You will give us. You will choose whether you want to give us. You don't want to give us. We won't take. You will decide to give it to us. What about our daughters? Yeah, you can take. Here in verse number 9. But when he presents the case to the people in the city, he turns the situation completely around. How does he put it? Et benotam nikach lanu, their daughters, we will take. We will choose what we want. Lenashim. Vet benotenu, and our daughters, nitein lahem. They won't be able to take. We will choose whether to give them or not. You hear the tremendous change just with a few words, how it changes the whole thing? In other words, it's all up to us. We will be on top. We will have supremacy. But there is only one condition, one small thing. They are circumcised. We should be circumcised. That's all. But besides that, we are on top. And listen to how he concludes. Because after all, mikneihem vekinyanam, you know, what do you have to be afraid of? That we are going to be like one nation, but they are so much cleverer than we are, right? They are good in business. Don't worry. Mikneihem vekinyanam, everything that they will acquire, vechol behemtan halo lanu heim, it's ours. So the more successful they are, the better we are. The better off we are. And we control them. We decide what we want, what we don't want. The main thing is, let's do this in order that they should agree to settle down with us. The rest, it's all in our hands. So let's just give in to them in such a small thing, and all the rest, it's up to us. And in verse number 24, they fell for it. Vayishmuel Hamor v'Shechem no, kol yetzei shari ro, the leaders of the nation agreed. Vayimolu kol zachar kol yetzei shari ro. All the male members which made the decisions there decided that yes, they are going to go through mila, the circumcision. Okay? Okay, we'll stop here and we'll wait to the conclusion of the story tomorrow.